From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. David Brewster has cut a wide swath in journalism, civic life, and culture in Seattle. He's the editor and founder of the online newspaper Crosscut. He also originated the Best Places Guidebook that covers the Northwest, published by Sasquatch Books. He started and ran both the Seattle Weekly and Town Hall. Back in 2001, a Seattle Times panel called David Brewster one of the 150 Seattleites most influential in the city's history. In the interest of full disclosure, you should know that David has been on the KUOW board, and I have made a modest, very modest financial contribution to the online newspaper Crosscut. Thank you so much for coming by. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for the contribution.
You grew up in New Jersey and went to Yale. Was it a big deal in your family for someone in the family to go to Yale, or was that kind of expected?
Well, no. My father had gone to the University of Nebraska, and Yale was seemed like a big reach. I went to a really lousy high school in New Jersey, so I got really good grades and fooled the Yale admissions people. Went there terrified, expecting to be thrown out when they caught on with me. But it was a wonderful experience.
Are there parts of that Yale experience that you keep with you today, either associations or something that influenced you from that education?
Well, I began as an English professor here at the University of Washington, and so the interest in literature is very strong, continues on. I grew up in New Jersey, around New York City, and when I was at Yale, I would go down there almost every weekend when theater prices were low and $2 tickets for the opera and so forth. So the New York way of doing things in media and in and the arts has had a big influence. I wouldn't want to live in New York, but but I like importing some of their good ideas out here.
Why the upper left-hand corner? You came to take the job at the University of Washington. Yeah. Was it the job that brought you here? Did you desire to come here?
My wife and I wanted to move to San Francisco, but I couldn't get a job offer there. And so there was this strange place, Seattle. I had a friend at Yale who was from here, Tom Kubota. And about all I knew about Seattle was reading an article quickly in the National Geographic, I think, where it pointed out that every house had a big lawn sweeping down to Lake Washington and a big boat at the end of the dock. And it seemed like a magical place. It was 1965, and it was a very exciting time. 3 years after the World's Fair,
sure.
University of Washington was expanding dramatically.
Can you remember your first impressions when you arrived in the city?
Well, it seemed a lot smaller than I thought, and a lot more, a lot of trees, individual houses, very unlike East Coast cities. That is, very few apartment buildings, not a lot of tall buildings at that time. Of course, the university campus was very impressive. And I remember thinking that it was a long way to go culturally. And I was very interested. I would go to things downtown, and my colleagues in the UW English department would all kind of scoff at me for even going to the Seattle Symphony, and they had a very much a condescending view about Seattle arts. And it was a time where the city was really changing culturally and politically. Ideal time to break in reporting about it.
Well, how and why did you make the jump from academia? A lot of people find themselves very comfortable there and stay there for a lifetime. You did not. Mm-hmm. Did something push you out, or did something pull you away?
I had worked at newspapers in New Jersey for 5 summers, helping to put myself through graduate school and undergraduate. So I really loved doing that. But in those days, it was very easy to get a full-ride scholarship in graduate school, so I just kept on doing that, not quite sure whether I would like teaching more than journalism. Taught for 3 years. Was kind of discouraged about it, partly because so many of my colleagues were unhappy. And I thought, gee, that I want to be in a profession where people are much more happy about their work. So I then said, well, okay, so I'm now going to try journalism. Got a job first at the Seattle Times and Seattle Magazine, King Broadcasting Seattle Magazine. That really did it. It was a great place, very interesting colleagues. I started immediately, doing stories, big stories about the mayor and all of that. And I said, well, journalism is my thing, and this town is my place.
And were people happy there in those places?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, a first job is a first really good job is the sort of thing that sets you up for life. And I think in many ways, I have tried to recreate my 2 years at Seattle Magazine and went out of business in 1970. In everything that I've done after that, interesting colleagues, people writing in a kind of literary way, journalism of big ideas and high standards, and certainly The Weekly was that. Town Hall is a kind of another version of that, and Crosscut is my last try to rebottle that lightning.
We might be at the end of the alternative weekly era, but in founding the Seattle Weekly, you were right there at the beginning. What niche were you trying to fill with that?
At that time, the papers like Seattle Weekly were aimed at a young professional readership. 35 is a median age, people that had committed themselves to some degree, gotten married, decided to become a lawyer, whatever, but were still very thought the boss was a jerk, and a young Turk kind of readership. Ideal to write for because it's reform-minded and sophisticated and impatient. What happened to the alternative weekly market is it shifted from the young professional target to the youth market. And advertising is what did that. Movies, cigarettes nationally were looking for a younger demographic when they got booted out of college papers. And so it became very different, as Seattle Weekly is now, very different than when I was
very different. I was going to comment on that. I mean, if you picked up the Weekly today and picked it up from when you were the editor, one thing you would notice immediately is the absence of the really long, in-depth articles. I don't see nearly as many in that paper as I used to see under your direction. It was almost more like The New Yorker that way, really long takes on issues. Yeah. Some thought they were a little bit too long, but it seems as though that was a conscious editorial decision on your part.
Well, it was the Weekly was a writer's paper, not an editor's paper. And I looked for people who wrote well and could learn to report. And that's part of my literary background. And who knew a lot and had a real passion in certain areas. And then, you sort of indulge them about that. And you're right, the articles were too long. Of course, it helped that printing prices were not as expensive then as they are now. The Seattle Weekly still does one long article a week, and I commend them for that. But there's not a lot of other news hole that is there after you do a lot of stuff about rock and roll, which is an important advertising base, restaurants, and show a little attitude here and there. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough left. And I mean, I would hate to try to do it now in the market for print publications.
You mentioned the importance of rock and roll to the alternative weeklies. It's been famously bruited about that you were not that big a fan of grunge in 1990, which, of course, became hugely influential and kind of actively kept that out of the pages of the Seattle Weekly. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. And there's, Sub Pop was in our same building, and I knew that. And, we had a lot of people that were writing about that, but it's not my bag. I'm a classical music guy, and I suppose it's going to be in my tombstone. Here's the guy that missed grunge. And, it is a black mark for an editor. You got to be on top of all of these things there. I plead guilty.
David Brewster is my guest, publisher, deep thinker, he's been called. His most recent effort is the online newspaper Crosscut. And we've been talking about his career with the Seattle Weekly. What made you want to move on from that? It was pretty successful.
Yeah, well, 21 years, and it seems to me that there ought to be a statute of limitations for an editor. You do get tired, and I was getting stale about that. I think what was also happening is that the investors in Seattle Weekly had never received any dividends. We plowed it all back in. Many of them had passed on their investment to their children, who were less interested than their parents in the venture. So the board was not a go-for-it board anymore. I wanted to expand a books division we had to a national books division, Sasquatch Books, still very successful today. We'd started a second paper, Eastside Week, wanted to invest more in that, and the board was not going to do that. So that seemed to be a signal, probably a good time to sell. And we sold at the top of the market, and so the investors were happy. I had some capital to do some other things, but I do regret the sale because I think was taken over by a company that didn't run it well.
Well, one of those other things is what you've called your biggest Walter Mitty indulgence. It was a bar, a pub?
Yes, the Mark Toby Pub. And I came back from a trip to England entranced by pubs as places for conversation and meeting people, strangers and all that, and tried that impossible thing, which is to transplant the English pub to non-English soil. It was right underneath the Alexis Hotel, and it was an attempt to sort of rebottle what the Brasserie Pittsburgh had earlier on. It's a French restaurant where I would go as a reporter and run into everybody, and stories would be just sitting there for you. And it was a great place, made money 1 month, the first month, never after. And so was is one of my most illustrious failures. But, you know, Town Hall was a Walter Mitty experience, too. I had no business putting on shows. I loved the arts, loved being on that side of the footlights and doing that. It was a very fortunate adventure all the way through. It's a really good building, and it's really flourishing now. My successor, Ware Harmon, is doing a fabulous job.
It's become a real centerpiece of civic life and cultural life in Seattle. And I was wondering, in the early days of it getting started, I can remember conversations with you, and it was partly to create a city meeting place, but it was also partly just to preserve this beautiful building, the former Christian Science Church.
Right.
What, did one come before the other in your desire to be part of it?
Well, one thing, Ross, is interesting is it was an attempt to create a mid-size concert facility. You know, as musical groups, classical music groups, I was the head of one of them that were homeless, couldn't afford a building of each of them, couldn't afford a separate building. So it was a common space for that. But I was trying to plug, and Town Hall has done this, is the mid-size, which is about that 1,000 seats. It's 850 at Town Hall. And the middle has always been my quest. Middle-class reform is really what I covered and what I found interesting about Seattle as a political movement. It's a mid-sized city, and it lacks mid-sized facilities. It has large ones, and it has grassroots and small ones, but it doesn't have the middle. And the middle, to me, is always the sweet spot. It's the hardest place to occupy, though, because you're big enough to have a lot of costs, but you're not big enough to have endowments and a lot of coasting room. But I also like mid-sized facilities like that, or Meany Hall here on the university campus, because the audiences are largely people that are really interested in that night. It's a demanding audience. And one of the things that I learned at Town Hall is that you're only as good as your audience. And audiences that are really smart and adventuresome draw the best out of performers. I used to think it was the performers that mattered. It's the audience that matters. And Town Hall really has a great audience and just the right size.
In the wake of the failure of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer as a newspaper, many online news outlets sprouted up, including the PI itself, Neighborhood Blogs, Publicola, Investigate West, and, of course, your online newspaper, Crosscut. Do you think these outlets have picked up the slack from the loss of a daily newspaper's reporting?
Well, they're very lively places. Entrepreneurship and inventing new things will do that and attract people that like to do that. They're too small. There may be too many of us in a way, so it's harder for the readers to find what they're looking for in an efficient way. I think... And I see this happening in maybe a dozen cities in America, and Seattle is certainly one of them, where it is beginning to coalesce around this. It's a public interest model, nonprofit model, much like public radio, with a broad base of support from members and from foundations and from sponsors and all that. I like that, and I particularly like the nonprofit and the public dimension of that, in the same way I admire that in public broadcast. And there are a lot of writers that are free, a lot of them who, of course, were laid off, but others who had gotten out of journalism to go to work for Microsoft and so on, but miss it and that. So we have 75 really interesting freelance writers at CrossCut. We have staff writers, too, but this is really the basis of that. And The thing I worry about in a city like Seattle is that there's a declining interest in local news. We are a very globalized environment here, and people find, I mean, just like the Gates Foundation finds, you know, problems in Africa of more importance than problems in Seattle. I think a lot of our people that are working for organizations of that kind find Seattle politics provincial, small potatoes. Mm-hmm. And 30 years ago, and as that, as you know, we were all about building a great city. We're now, and we're very interested in local stuff. Now, these companies, as they often say, are places that are changing the world. And on balance, I think it's a better call for this city to be about creating a great city that others might imitate rather than changing the world, which is, I think, part of Seattle's overreach.
David Brewster, you've said the population here in Seattle is more sophisticated than the media would lead you to believe. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a highly educated population. It's very open-minded. I mean, you just look at the businesses and the kinds of people that are there. And like most West Coast cities, the media lags that. San Francisco has got that same problem. I've often thought that quality of journalism is directly inversely related to the distance from Washington, D.C. And there's a way in which at the center of national politics or at the center of national culture and business the way New York is and so on, there is more interest in that than out here. And it's a kind of a secessionist model.
We're just about out of time, but I always thought you would have been a natural for politics, local politics, and you did participate in some others' campaigns. But did you ever seriously consider running yourself?
No. I like writing about it. I find politics really fascinating, and the whole picture that journalism can look at, I love. But I'm an observer, and I don't think I would suffer fools well enough to be a successful politician.
You have to be everybody's politician, don't you?
You do.
Finally, you're such a restless entrepreneur. Do you have another stage in mind? Do you have another step to take?
I don't. I am stepping back from a full-time involvement in Crosscut and seeking my replacement to lead the company. I've got excellent people in there now, and just as I pass town hall on to a new generation. So I want to do that. I want to continue writing and continue being on the board and maybe doing some special ventures for that. I'm intrigued about getting some life back into Pioneer Square, where our office is, and the void left by Elliott Bay. I'd like to fill that, not with another bookstore, but with something that has that kind of intellectual crackle that Elliott Bay brought to that. I love Pioneer Square, but it's really struggling.
David Brewster, who's made a career of bringing intellectual crackle to Seattle, thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.